Lorna Standing Ready was born and raised on the Papikasis Reserve. Her parents died when she was young, and she became the foster child of Keith and Doris McKechnie. Lorna raised 7 children who now have families of their own. Lorna survived 10 years of residential schools to go on to university studies. While in residential schools, her love of learning and gifts for art and music were recognized with awards and certificates. She excelled at the Saskatchewan Indian Federated College, which is now, of course, another name, University of Regina. She holds a Bachelor of Administration and is presently working on a master's degree in human resource development. Lorna is the recipient of the Saskatchewan Indian Women's Association Appreciation Award. 2005, she received the Saskatchewan Jubilee Award. She has been involved in the women's movement, health and child welfare programs, and since 2008 with the John Howard Society. Nearly finished here. For many years, Lorna has been active in many roles with the NDP, serving as secretary to the party's Aboriginal Peoples Commission and vice president of the provincial NDP from 2001 to 2007. So, Lorna, welcome.
Thank you. Miigwech. Thank you for the introduction, Helen. But I'm just Lorna Standing Ready. I was born Lorna Jean Keewayton, and my Indian name is Nohtukapetot Miyomaskiki, woman who brings good medicine. So I just got that name not too long ago. I lived with my other name, which was Little Jumping Deer. I was always jumping around, and brings great pleasure when I see little ones jumping around. I wished I had that energy. You see a clock up there, and Kokum has lost her watch. I misplaced it. So I was asked to speak on the Truth and Reconciliation Commission. But before I do that, I've introduced myself, and I'm a direct descendant of the Treaty 4 signatory, Papikasis, and his father, my great grandfather. His first wife passed away, and my Kokum, Ruby Arrow, was a direct descendant because he was in the process of discussing Treaty 4. And then he passed on, so Papikasis, from his second wife, continued on. But at that time, women couldn't hold the office of chief. We are a paternalistic society. And I'd also, I'm a third generation of the Indian residential school era. And 2 of my children went to Indian residential school. The boy, the oldest boy, was blackmailed, but not blacklisted from schools in Regina. He had a hard time. But he's got his story to tell. While I was away last week, he received a call. He received a letter from his lawyer saying that she wasn't going to represent him anymore because she was going on to other things. So he's been on this list for quite some time. And it's very disheartening, especially when he's grown up with the... I always pray for him to say good words and to say true words, but it's embedded in him to survive. In order to survive, he had to lie. So he always tells big stories, but that's his story. My my daughter was, they were both abused. And they, that was when they went to Labrette. And Labrette was won by Indian people who were abused. So the abused became the abuser. It's not a very good story. Nothing is with our residential school. And I spoke, as Jim would know, on the community radio. And he knows that if I should have a trigger, and I've also let it be known that do come up and put your hand on my shoulder, because I don't have a support worker with me. But it's getting better as I go along. I was born and raised on the Pepikasis Reserve for the first 5 and a few months, because in August I was taken away by the farmer instructor to go to school. He came one day, and that was the first time I saw a white man. I lived in the big bush with the clan, my Kokman Mushum, my uncles and aunts. We all had our log houses, and in the summertime we had our tents. So it was a good time. My classroom was the great outdoors. It was beautiful. I learned about the heavens, the universe. I learned about the trees. I learned about the animals. I knew, and I still do, could track an animal. I've learned to survive. And when we were starving, gophers tasted pretty good. So just an insight of the life that I led on the reserve. But my mother was a great gardener. She made do with what she had. So I had my moccasins, and they were something to wear around. And I still have some at home. But leaving home was quite traumatic for my parents as well, as I look back. And I often wonder if your babies were taken from your arms and never to see them again. It was hard for them because they had TB and they had to go to the hospital. But we could have looked after ourselves, because Kokum and Mushum were always there. We had no welfare in those days, but it was the government that came and took us away, my 3 brothers and myself. And you know, just looking at me, I'm not that big, but you know, I have a very strong heart and a very persevering heart, and my inner being has, and the teachings that I got from Kokum and Mushum has sustained me throughout my life. And my dad said, as well my mother, that whatever happens to you in residential school, as long as they don't get in here, because nobody can see that, as long as they don't see in here or feel in here, because they're not there, you own that. And whatever happens to your body, that is part of life. Because we all learn something from our experiences. And the first school I went to was the All Saints Indian Residential School. I was picked up by the farmer instructor along with my brothers, and I sat in the middle of him and his wife. And we rode in an old truck on a gravel road to Prince Albert. We started in the morning, and Mrs. Anger, the farmer instructor's wife, had made lunch. So we stopped along the way, and my brothers were so glad to jump out of the truck, and I was glad to play with them. And we jumped around and horsed around, and we had our lunch. And it was sandwiches, bologna, and peanut butter, and a cookie. So that was good. But that was the last time I would ever play with my brothers. Then we got to Prince Albert, All Saints, at night. And we were given something to eat. Not the kind of food I was used to. I don't know what it was, but it was all mixed up. I don't know. It was just so strange to me. And the long tables were so strange. At home, we used to sit in a circle and we'd sit on the floor and we'd eat. You know, you had no table or chairs. So, and we're always passing our food to each other. But here you were given something and you were told to eat it. There was no kindness, no sharing, no respect. But there was always the time, and I got used to being programmed. I was programmed throughout my life in the residential schools I attended. It was time to wake up, time to say prayers, time to go to the washroom, time to wash up, time to brush your teeth. First time I saw a toothbrush, and it hurt my gums, but you know, I had to learn. Time to make your bed, time to get dressed, time to line up in pairs, ready to go to the dining room. And it was time to eat, and I can tell you more about that, of how a little girl was put in a cage because she lost her teeth, and I didn't want to lose mine. Because in this cage, she crawled in, and she had a dish, two dishes, one for her porridge and one for her bread. And she was told to eat there. They didn't want to listen to her slurping her food. So that was quite a traumatic event when I first went there. So after breakfast, we'd line up and we'd go back again. It was time to wash your hands and brush your teeth again. Time to go to the bathroom. You had to make sure you went to the bathroom because you couldn't go. You couldn't go otherwise. You had to learn to control your bodily functions. And it was time to line up and go to school. I went to school in the mornings because I was the smallest one there. And in the afternoons, I didn't attend. I was told to go to sleep. So it was a time to learn things. And don't ask questions. Do as you're told and don't think. And I learned about Dick and Jane in the little red book, the yellow book, and the blue book. But on that first day at school, I had my hair cut. It was long. And they cut it right just near your ear, right around. And they put your hair down and they made bangs. So if you see some residential school pictures, that was how I had my hair done. My first haircut. And I was told never, never to cut my hair. Because there's something happened. Something bad has happened. And I was too small to understand. But it's a sign of mourning. And I, at that time, strapped, threatened, and it was so lonesome. And I learned to cry without making a noise. No more talking in Cree, only English. And my kokum used to talk to me in Cree and English. And they were trying to teach me both languages. And today, I will say a few words in Cree to my great-grandsons who live with me. I remember all my kokum and mushum and my dad had taught me. And it has sustained me. But once, when I left, they said, "Don't throw us away." And I often reflected, what did they mean? Don't throw us away. Years later, dawned on me, I was not to forget my roots or my culture or where I came from and not be ashamed of who I was. But being ashamed is part of being in residential school. Losing respect for yourself is part of it. I came home that first year, and that was another, without seeing my brothers. We were separated. And then it was my first train trip by myself. I had a string around my neck with my name on where I was going. So the people on the train knew where I would be going, and they looked after me. Then I went to a day school 5 miles from my own home, which was another experience. Because in day school, the teachers were just as strict. And if you didn't learn, you got the ruler, like in residential school, across your ears or on top of your head, whatever was there. And my late brother became deaf at that school. But at least I was home. At least that. And I could say more on that, but I'll hurry on. From there, I went to Bertel Indian Residential School. My parents at this time were still in the hospital. And that was run by the United Church of Canada. There, I learned to join 4-H. I started piano lessons. I don't know why I was picked. I used to always sing, so they must have figured I knew a little bit about music. Of course I did. I was brought up with music. My grandfather was a great singer. And there, it was a time to learn, a time to be programmed, and having the same ritual as Prince Albert Residential School. But there was another experience. For you see, the staff there and in all schools did not look out for your well-being. And so one day, I was caught. I was 11. And that's the day. I just couldn't fight. You see, that's the day I became a little woman. That's the day that I knew there was a difference. I was raped, and that memory I put in the back of my mind, I did not want to think of it. I never thought of it all these years. I lived a lie of my purity. I lived it. And from Port La Prairie, I went on to Bertel Indian Residential School. The same ritual was there. But this time I took dancing lessons and I continued on with piano lessons. And I did take first place in public speaking in the Brandon Festival. And I continued doing chores. It was time for me to serve out the food, help cook the food with breakfast and the other meals, help to clean, get on my hands and knees, do them, and my turn in the laundry room. And there I saw the strapping of my lifetime when a friend of mine got the licking of her lifetime. She was strapped so bad, and at the time of her month, I never seen anything like that in my life. She couldn't go to the bathroom for 3 days. You should have seen her. It was so graphic. I became ashamed of every month of what I had to go through. We were always told, if we were had a baby, that it was our fault. So, with those incidents, it was hard to be proud of yourself, to have respect for yourself, because you were defiled, you were dirty. But what kept me going was what I was taught. No one knows what's in your heart, what's in your mind, whatever happened to your body. That's part of life. And so from there, you see, I was a government child. When my parents signed the papers, the government had legal responsibility. So I was sent to a foster home because I did not want to go back to the residential school. I knew it was going to be my time because one other girl had a baby. And I did not want to go there. So I was put in a foster home. It was a good home. And I went to church. I was baptized. By the way, I was baptized in each residential school. I was baptized at home as a baby, I was told. I was baptized Anglican. I was baptized Presbyterian. I was baptized United. I was baptized United again when I went to Proud. And then I was baptized here in Regina when I attended the Church of Christ and Disciples. So I've been baptized 6 times. And I always tell people I come well ordained. So while in Froud, I played the piano for the Sunday school. And I worked in a store with Montjoy's, my foster mother's parents. So I learned a little bit of the business world. But you know what struck me being in a foster home was being asked in my whole life a question. Would I babysit while my foster parents went out to square dance? They loved square dance. And I just looked like, I don't know, I said, And my foster mom looked at me and she said, "Will you babysit Lorna?" And I looked at her and I said, "Yes, I will." And she said, "What's the matter?" I said, "I can't explain it because nobody ever asked me any questions. Except when I go home," I said, "to the reserve." She said, "Whatever you want, you ask us. Otherwise, we don't know what you want." But I continued to live like residential school. And I continued that throughout my life, bringing up my children. I continued to strap them if they didn't learn their lessons properly. I continued to hit them over the head with a ruler. That's the way I was taught. But I've been given another chance. I have two great-grandsons now, and I tell them every morning, "Good morning, babes," I tell the biggest one. The little one, who's 7, the oldest one is 10, but he's taller than I am. And the little one, I tell him, "Good morning, Papoose." That means baby in Cree. And one day he says to me, "Cook'em, I'm not a baby anymore." And I said, "Well, can I call you Paps?" "Oh, sure, as long as I'm not Papoose," he said. So he's growing up. So this leads into the TRC. And so I attended, I believe, the first one in Regina. I didn't know it then, but I was curious. It was about residential school. And there I spoke, my first time speaking. But you know what hit me was after my late husband passed away. I was sitting in my living room, and I was going through some pictures. And I had some pictures of a friend of mine who went to residential school. And it triggered me of what happened to me and how I fought for my life. But you can't fight against a man when you're 11 years old. So I put down everything and I cried and I phoned my daughters. I said, "Come and get me. I need to get out of here. I needed to run. I needed the fresh air." So they took me with the windows down in the car and we drove. The wind felt good. It was a cleanser. So that's what brought me on to the TRC. And then I went on to the Edmonton Truth and Reconciliation Commission. By that time, I was the leading elder, national leading elder of the All Native Circle Conference of the United Church of Canada. The Reverend John Halcrow from Norway House had recommended me. And my partner was the Reverend Phil Schuyler from Oneida, Ontario. And it has been a busy last 3 years being leading elder and being able to continue on with representing people, with talking for the people, and yet always knowing what had happened to me, I must overcome. And at times, it does trigger and come back to me. But the final TRC, someone heard my cry to attend, I guess. Someone had asked me, "Lorna, are you going to the TRC, the final one?" And I said, "Well, you know, the All Native Circle Conference hasn't got any money. But I will be watching it televised. But I sure wished I was there." So I did go to the TRC in Ottawa. And I was billeted at a minister's place. And they looked after me so good. And they said, we'll take you where you want. And they stayed with me the full day. And I said, you know, I'm okay. I'm okay. I'm not alone. So if you have to do something, and if I need a ride, I'll call you. So we worked it out pretty good. But I believe it was the Toronto Conference of the United Church that paid for my ticket. And I was billeted. And the All-Native Circle looked at their budget and were able to give me $500 to continue on with other incidental costs. And I was busy from 6:30 in the morning when I got up to 10, 11 at night. And I must tell you about my highlights. The opening of the ecumenical service in front of City Hall on the podium of the Human Rights Memorial. Whoever was in charge there asked me to speak, to do the welcoming address. And being on different treaty territory, I had asked, you know, what about your elders? And they said, we looked and they're all busy, the ones that do speak out. And I said, with somebody's blessing from the territory, I will. So they got that. So I went. I was dressed with another, well, I always wear a dress. It's part of what I was taught by Kokum and my mom, to always wear a dress, especially when you go out. The dress represents Mother Earth. You are the giver of life. You have a close connection as a woman. And you will get your strength from that. And just remember what the circle means of the dress. And keep your arms covered and your legs covered. That was part of our modesty, which we lost in residential school, which I've been so happy to once again practice what I was taught, because it makes me stronger, makes me go on with life. And the colors I wear all represent my life in some way or another. So at this opening, I prayed. And I took up a stone, and I went around where we were to place the stone, and I prayed. I prayed hard for the people. I prayed for my heart. I prayed for my mind. I prayed for my whole being that the Creator had blessed me with as a person, a woman on this great earth. I prayed with all my might for the people. And to have open minds. And I prayed. And I put my stone down. Then I walked around clockwise again. As life goes in a circle. And the people came. And they did the same thing. They walked around. Held their stone up. To acknowledge the Creator. And they placed it in a pile. Because these very stones are going to be used as a memorial to the survivors of the residential school system. But what brought humbleness to me that day was the long line of people who came and wanted a blessing. Who came to shake my hand. It was an honor, a humbling honor, to know that they felt a part of my words. Another highlight was attending the parliamentary breakfast that I was invited to by the moderator of the United Church, who, by the way, is a good friend of mine. And other members from the government, one from the conservative, one from the liberal, And the NDP officials were there along with the United Church officials. And we had agreed, after talking, that we would continue on with dialogue and to work together. This was accepted by those in attendance. And to work to the future of what comes from the TRC recommendations, the 94 recommendations. And another highlight was the official invitation from the Governor General of Canada. And I have that, and I'm going to frame it for my kids. And it was to attend the closing remarks of the TRC at Rideau Hall. And a lot of media were there. And I was right in front of media. And my picture was all over the TV, because when they had shown on the screen flashes of students, flashes of people, you know, and flashes of different schools, and I got a trigger. A school I went to, I didn't think I'd see that. I didn't think that would happen. But it did. So I let out a little noise. But media heard it. I just said, oh. And my friend from Ontario, she lives in Winnipeg now, put her arms around me. And it was just like in residential school where we used to mother each other and support each other like that. So she, and I was older than her, but she helped cook them along. But it was the dark times. Is it gone? When my mind is closed, the door is shut on that helpless, frightened, abused little girl. But you know, life goes on. Well, I'm not alone. There are thousands who today have weathered the storms in life and continue on their own road dealing with life. It's good to feel strengthened and cared for and sisterly love. We had to be mothers to our little sisters and comfort them when they cried. We now know we don't strap our kids or abuse them. When they do something wrong, or hit them with a ruler when they don't know how to do their homework, we are given a second chance with our grandchildren and great-grandchildren how to love and treat these little souls. We have learned to say, I love you. Today, most recently, a few days ago, I believe it was September, in early September, I was reading the newspaper at home. I like to sit on my back door and have a cup of coffee and read my newspaper. And I came across the National Center for Truth and Reconciliation is having a meeting at the First Nations University of Canada. And that was September the 1st. And I said, I just threw my paper down. And I said to my granddaughter, I have to go. And she said, okay, but we have the boys. This is their first day of school. Oh, what poor timing. I did tell them that. But we went, boys come first. So we got there and they had an agenda. You know, we don't have agendas in our world. But we've become so colonized, we make agendas. And I often speak up, let's go with the flow. You know, just put down what you want to talk about. Don't put any times down. Because when you were born, there was no time when you were born. You just came. So it wasn't followed. The survivor spoke. Some questions there were, why are we here? What do you want to see in the National Center for Truth and Reconciliation? And that the National Truth and Reconciliation have a lot of records, and probably some of your records. Do you want these records online? How do you want to access these records? These are very personal. But you know, when you leave this world, your book of life will be open. So we might as well start turning the pages down here. And what do you want to see? Well, some of the answers were a cultural support center to learn our spiritual and cultural way of life, to learn our own language in a rich, supportive way by living in our language. And we want to deprogram ourselves. Today I still do laundry on Monday. Tuesdays is ironing day. Wednesdays is mending day. You go on and on, you know. But, you know, when you go to work, those go by the wayside. But I'm home now, so I kind of revert to those ways. There will be many truths, but no reconciliations. Those who do not attend are not ready. We need to listen to each other with our whole being and have empathy for one another. The onus is on each of us to do what we can do on the path to reconciliation. We need to talk about the residential school arrow like we're doing today. Can you imagine an Indian farmer instructor, in my case, take your 4, 5, or 6-year-old? My sister went to school. She was 4 years old. She was a baby, and I was her mother. To recognize we are all treaty people from different treaty areas, to learn about the spiritual and cultural ways of the Aboriginal people that provided them with the courage, the faith, and resilience that life goes on, and to survive. To live in harmony with nature and have respect for all that the Creator has provided for us with the need to survive. Now, I think you've all heard Rex Murphy. He said, this should be an election issue. This should be not an election issue, but the election issue. Most repairing relationships, sympathy and apology. We need action and commitment. And today, you've taken action by inviting me to say a few words, and I know I've gone over the time, but you know, something like this is not going to take 20 minutes, 25 minutes, and I've tried so hard. But I will let you. Peter Levine so aptly said, trauma is not what happens to us, but what we hold inside us in the absence of an emphatic witness. So I thank each and every one of you here for listening to me, for giving me that strength to go on for the years I have left. And before I leave, I came across this morning this very pamphlet I was given at the Regina. And there was a poem in there, Strength and Courage. There's no author. It takes strength to be firm. It takes courage to be gentle. It takes strength to stand guard. It takes courage to let your guard down. It takes strength to conquer. It takes courage to surrender. It takes strength to be certain. It takes courage to have doubt. It takes strength to fit in. It takes courage to stand out. It takes strength to hide your feelings. It takes courage to show them. It takes strength to feel a friend's pain. It takes courage to feel your own pain. It takes strength to hide feelings. It takes courage to show them. It takes strength to endure abuse. It takes strength to stop it. It takes strength to stand alone. It takes courage to lean on another. It takes courage to love. It takes courage to be loved. It takes strength to survive. It takes courage to live. And with this, I leave you because it represents my past life. The future is ahead for you and me. And may the Great Spirit be with each and every one of us, physically, mentally, spiritually, and emotionally. For those are the strengths He's given us, and the courage and wisdom to deal with our challenges throughout life, and always thought, word, or deed, that we recognize the Creator in all that He's given each and every one of us. And this is a free book. In it, it contains very brief, final, what we have learned, the principles of truth and reconciliations. And may Gretch for the tobacco, I shall do what I have to do with it, to burn a little in my bedroom and to smudge myself, and to pray for you, each and every one of you. And I thank you kindly for coming with me on my journey. And it's a wonderful journey. You've given me strength. Megwich, Megwich. Hi, hi.